Hit it. Welcome back to the Saturday Show. Michelle Bodkin, Jay Catch, along for the ride. Hour two of the program underway. And Jason's theme today, Michelle, have you picked up on it? He told me, so I know what it is. Did he tell you what it is?
Yeah, he told me what it was, too. Got,
like, kind of jock jam slash it's basketball season. Like,
it's
that time of the year. So that one, obviously, loving basketball, Jason mentioned it right before we went on. And it's fun. So good job, Jason, you know.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I'm still waiting for like some of the traditional jock jam anthems, though. Come on now, my man.
I was going to say, Jake, you'll be happy to know Love and Basketball is one movie I actually have watched.
Oh you have? Michelle,
have.
Okay. You've seen Love and Basketball. Slow clap, because, Jason, do you know how few movies Michelle has actually seen?
No, I don't.
Oh, it's...
It's shameful.
Shameful is probably too strong of a term. No, it's appropriate, considering, like, we make references, like, to Iron Man, and Michelle's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, so, I haven't seen a ton either, Michelle, honestly, because I'm busy watching a lot of sports. So, I think I have seen, well, actually, I haven't seen Love and Basketball, so never mind.
What?
You haven't seen Love and Basketball?
I haven't seen that one, no.
That's a classic, man. You got to see that one.
It is actually a good one.
Yeah, it is a good one. It's one of those ones that they kind of, like, a lot of sports movies get, like, cliche-y, and they just don't, they're very niche. That one actually is a good movie, I think, overall.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, all right, let's talk some college football, Michelle. Spring camps are underway. Utah through essentially week one here. BYU after today will actually hit the halfway point of their spring camp. I know that you've been covering Utah from afar, but I guess I'll just say right off the top, it's good to see Cam Rising and Brant Keithy back on the field.
Yes, yes. I think that was kind of the overall big takeaway. Obviously, I haven't seen any of these people yet. That will happen next week, but just kind of reading through other people's reports of getting to see what was happening and how people were looking, I think that's, and just the comments from the coaches and the players after practices and whatnot, I think that was the overarching theme, is it was just really good to have them back and a lot of the other kind of injured core as well. So knock on wood that no repeats of last season happen and these guys can kind of stay healthy and on the field. Because I think everyone was reminded last week of just what a big difference those players make, even if it is, you know, shirts and shorts right now.
Well, and sure, and that, here's the thing, I say this all the time to people, take everything you see in spring and, like, temper it and just take it with a grain of salt, because spring is a period for trying out new things, Michelle. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is position changes, new formations, new scheme adjustments. You're giving them a test run to see if they actually take, and if they don't, you know what, you say, we tried it, we're going back to this, we're just switching to that, but... Trying to make, like, hard and fast conclusions out of spring ball, that is a fool's errand.
It is. Other than, I think, assessing guys that you already know what you're getting with them, right? Like, I think it's safe to jump to some conclusions there. But with some of the new pieces, transfer add-ons or the high school kids, like, take it a little bit easy on them through spring, because there is a lot of experimenting and just getting guys up to speed, whether it's, you know, with the vernacular of your offense or your defense or even, you know, just what it is to be a college athlete. It's, you know, it's a pretty big jump from high school to college and college to the NFL. So, you know, there's just a lot of learning going on, especially in spring.
Sure, and that's the other thing about this is you look at how things are going to go in the fall and trying to project that based off of spring. The other thing about it is it's going to change because there's another transfer portal period to come.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other thing about the spring period is there are coaches who are evaluating their lineup right now, Michelle, and saying, okay, by the end of spring, they're looking at it and saying, okay, we need to target there, and there for potential additions via the portal. And also, you're probably thinking in the back of your mind, guy X, Y, Z on the list, we could probably encourage them to hit the portal as well.
Well, and I mean, there's also always the threat of potentially losing someone you don't want to lose.
Sure.
Too.
And, so. Well, and that also, yes, that does exist, obviously. And here's the thing, like the Jaquindon Jackson situation for Utah, you don't want to lose that guy. But you know what? In this day and age of the portal and with NIL, it's going to happen, and it sucks.
It's what it is. Thankfully, yeah. This was a case where, you know, that was a position I think Utah can manage and handle that.
You'd think so, yes.
But the, you know, when it's someone that really, really is hard to replace, like a quarterback, yeah, that would be disastrous. And I did. Cam's locked in. Like, I'm not worried about Cam leaving. But
at this point, if Cam were to leave, that might be like just a downright like nuclear bomb on the Utah football program.
It would. But it's not something that I foresee. Like, I would be stunned. I would probably quit if that happened. He's locked in. So I'm not saying or projecting or
sure.
it that's happening, but like, you know, that's the kind of transfer that you don't want to see after spring.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, you're no doubt about that. Now, with regards to the BYU side of things, Michelle, I've been down there. I've watched probably a grand total of probably an hour's worth of football. They give us about 20 minutes. It's similar to what Utah's doing in the spring as well. There's a media viewing portion at the end. And there's that whole thing about, well, they're showing what you want. They're showing you what they want to show you. And I agree with that. They mm-hmm. are showing me certain things that they want me to see. I fully agree with that. But the one thing I've actually been kind of surprised by is in two of the media viewing portions, Michelle, BYU has gone full contact, including some of their quarterbacks wearing regular jerseys, where they're you can tackle them. Like, they're going full contact here.
You know, I think this is a case of, though, BYU's in a place where they need to know what they have. And so, you know, it's a bit of a high-risk, high-reward type of situation, right? You have kind of a bunch of new guys. I get that, I just lost his name. That was there last year. They kind of have an idea of what he brings to the table, but the others, you know, they're a little bit unfamiliar with. And you got to figure out, I think, on the defensive end, you know, where you're at. You've got to figure out what these quarterbacks look like in more real game type situations. And you got to knock on wood, hope for the best that, you know, they don't get injured, or if there is a little injury, that it's something that they'll have, you know, taken care of by the time the season rolls around. But I do think, you know, I think I would be pretty mad if Utah were to do anything like that, because there's just no need. I can understand from BYU's perspective why they would do that.
Well, and Kalani Sitake has been very upfront about it, saying that we need to be physical. We've got to get a sense of how we're supposed to play football in this league. I think one thing that BYU learned last year from the Big 12 was that there are no weeks off, Michelle. And that's one thing that Utah, they've got a decade plus of playing Power 5 and now be Power 4 football. They know that you have to bring it every single week. And I here's the thing. BYU, you can watch those games last season. I can point to multiple games where it felt like BYU just kind of got caught napping in a way. They were so used to, and this is not a bad thing, it's just the nature of how they went about scheduling in Independence, is they'd have good opponents, but they'd have a lull between them. They'd essentially play one good opponent, maybe have a week or two between, and they could cycle back up, where you get up for it, you can afford to have a three-quarter effort to win a game the following week, and then get back up for another big opponent. That's not the case at this level. And I think Kalani Sitake is trying to instill on his guys, and I think at this point, after a season of playing Big 12 football, they are fully aware that you take a week off, and I'll point directly to that West Virginia game last year for BYU, you will get your heads kicked in, because these are very, very good football teams you're facing.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a completely different ball game. Utah learned a little bit of that lesson, you know, early on in their deal. It's different being the big bad bully in Independence or the big bad bully in the Mountain West Conference, where you're kind of the top dog and and everybody else just kind of bows down, you know, around you. It's, you know, you're going into a conference with teams that are very well established, recruiting bigger, better, faster athletes and having the depth behind them. And it's just, it is, it's a whole learning curve. It's a whole different ball game. you know, Utah eventually figured it out and got themselves adjusted to that kind of rigor week in and week out. This is something that BYU's in the process of getting through, learning, figuring out, and it's gonna, you know, it's gonna take some time, but I think, you know, there's a point where they'll eventually get to kind of where they want to be and where they feel like they have a comfortable flow in their new environment.
Sure, and I agree with that. The biggest thing BYU's dealing with right now is obviously the quarterback battle that's ongoing between Jake Retzlaff and Gary Bohannon. And people ask me all the time, Michelle. Like, I was at swim lessons with my kids earlier this week, and I got stopped by a gentleman who recognized who I was, and we were chatting. He's like, okay, give me your real sense. Like, who's in the lead for the quarterback job? And I looked at him, I'm like, based on what I've seen, it is absolutely a 50-50 proposition right now. It could be either Retzlaff or Bohannon. I'm leaning, in my mind, Michelle, more towards it being Jake Retzlaff. I don't think that you want to bring a guy in from the junior college ranks that you think is absolutely capable of being the guy and then essentially just cast him aside after just four games having played for the program. But the nice part is Gary Bohannon is an experienced quarterback. He's got a Big 12 title on his resume, and that's something that nobody on BYU's roster can argue with. His resume speaks for itself.
Yeah, you know, I can see it kind of both ways in this, and obviously I haven't really watched either of them, but you have a guy that has a little bit of familiarity with the program because they were in it for a year, and they showed maybe some good things when they were called into action. So, you know, there's that comfort level there. But then on the other hand, you have a guy that's already played at this level, right? Sure. And played at this level at a high level. But you're having to kind of deal with the, you know, what does he look like post-injury and working him back into things and some of that kind of stuff. So on top of getting him familiar with, you know, what it is you do, the vernacular, all that kind of stuff. So, I think Gary's path is a little bit steeper, but it's not impossible.
Well, and the other thing about Gary, for example, is, Michelle, he played for Baylor when Jeff Grimes was there. So the base level knowledge of what BYU's offense is, he already has it. Because guess what? Jeff Grimes, him and Aaron Roderick installed that offense together at BYU. So the terminology, as he acknowledges, is a little different. And there's some philosophy differences between Grimes and A-Rod. But knowing the kind of the base level of the offense, that's not been a problem for Gary, because he said, he's like, what we do at Baylor and what we do at BYU, it's kind of the same thing. It's just a matter of kind of, as you kind of mentioned earlier, it's about picking up the terminology and learning the vernacular, and that is where he's got to catch up the most, but at least he's not having to learn from scratch.
Right. And again, this is, I am actually, is he fifth year, fourth year?
He's a seventh year, Michelle. Like we.
Okay. So he's another Cam Rising.
Yeah. No. So here's the thing, Michelle. We have in the Big 12 this season, if I recall correctly, Barry Trammell. Obviously, you know who he is. He works for SelloutCrowd.com, formerly of the Oklahoman out there. He's been covering the Big 12 forever. He's a great dude. We have him on weekly with DJ and PK during the football season. He wrote a piece recently that says essentially, and he's right about this. There are going to be 3 7th year potential starting quarterbacks in the Big 12 this year, Michelle, at least 3 6th-year quarterbacks. Like the experience factor alone for the quarterback play in this league, it's going to be up there.
Huge. You're dealing with a guy that's been through a lot, has been around the block, has seen a lot of things, experienced a lot of things. So I think from that perspective, you have to feel you know, a little confident in him as well. And he's pointed it out, you know, there's some learning curves still there, but it's not like, you know, he's a doe-eyed freshman that hasn't seen anything yet. And everything is just so new to him. You know, this is a guy that has some experience and has dealt with a lot of different things throughout his career. So, you know, I think there's a certain level of maturity and groundedness that comes with that. And even if he ends up being the backup, again, there's always a possibility that, you know, things don't work out with Ratliff or, that he gets hurt or whatever. And so then you have this guy waiting in the wings that has all this experience that can just kind of calmly go in and do what needs to be done.
Michelle, I know your football knowledge is awesome. When you refer to Jake Retzlaff as Brett Ratliff, that was awesome.
I know. Gosh. Wow. That was like a real Freudian slip. I am
sorry. I thought it was awesome. I'm like, Brett Ratliff. I haven't thought of his name in a minute. That's awesome. It's been
another Big 12 guy came from Oklahoma.
He did.
You know, it was kind of like.
It works. It works.
Wrong team.
Because Brett Ratliff, he was a heck of a player in his own right. So.
Yeah.
So that's the fun part about this. Now, Michelle, I think there's one position group that both of these programs, speaking of BYU and Utah, are both trying to get on the same page, and that's the offensive line. Obviously, they lost guys, both of them, to the pro ranks, and they're having to retool a little bit here. Give me your sense of what Utah's looking at O-line-wise, because it seems like, to me, BYU has a interesting mix of some very experienced players. I look at Braden Keim and Connor Pay, chief among them. They're both guys who are multi-year starters at this point for BYU, but they also have some young bucks who are figuring that, based on what I've seen, are going to be part of that starting lineup. Where do things stand for the Utes?
Yeah, I think ultimately they're really looking at replacing two positions, and that could result in an overall shakeup of the five,
sure,
just
yeah.
to find the best five that work well together. But Utah's kind of, I think, in a similar boat. A lot of guys that have been in the program for a long time have had opportunities to play. Maybe they're not necessarily the starter, but at this point in time, it shouldn't be anything new to them. It's just a matter of kind of plugging them in and getting that flow going. And then, of course, you know, you have a couple of younger guys. Spencer Fano. But I mean, he was a starter all last year, you know? So, I mean, he's a young guy that has a lot of experience, but I think they're going to want to see him taking another step forward. And then, of course, you bring in like the number two player in the entire state of Utah in, Garcia. Gosh, why am I losing?
Isaac Garcia.
Yes. Yep. So, you know, I think that's a guy that they're really intrigued with and have a lot of hope for and maybe would like to see play as a freshman. Maybe, again, not in a starter role. Maybe he comes in relief and gets some valuable experience that way. But, you know, I think there's a lot of hope for his potential in the program and what he can possibly do in the future. So there, I don't think the cupboard is bare in that regard. It really is just about finding the perfect five and then, you know, the next couple of guys that you plug in relief or if there's an injury, that sort of thing.
Well, and so I was reading a thing on 24/7 Sports. They had like a newcomers for the Big 12, and they included Utah in that conversation, obviously, because they're part of the conference going forward. And in that article, Michelle, was interesting. They pointed out Caleb Lomu, funny enough, as one of those guys. And they mentioned like he's one of the more highly rated offensive linemen that Utah have signed in the recent past. And obviously, Spencer Fano got on the field last year, and Caleb got in a little bit last year, not necessarily as much. But that speaks to kind of your point is there's a lot of young talent there. It's just a matter of using the spring period, and Jim Harding's one of the best of the best. I love talking to that dude. He's a fun dude to talk to, but he's an incredible offensive line coach, and he will shake it up, and he will juggle things, as you mentioned, to find the best five. If it requires moving guys to new positions, well, guess what? He'll do that, and I'm getting a similar sense just based on what I've experienced with TJ Woods so far down in Provo as their new offensive line coach, that he is very much in that same mold. This is a guy who worked with Gary Anderson at Wisconsin and at Oregon State and at Utah State. He knows what it means to find the best combination of guys. So I think the offensive line play for both fan bases, I wouldn't necessarily be as worried about it as some might be right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's where my concern lies. I really think for Utah, it's the defensive backfield. And again, it's not a panic type of thing. Utah has traditionally just been so good in that department, whether it's cornerbacks, safeties, it doesn't matter. They produce great talent there. They find great talent there. But, I mean, it's hard when you're kind of replacing three guys that were starting. So, you know, that's just a lot to replace. And it probably means, you know, some early mistakes. But I do have the confidence level there that they have the guys to be able to get that done and have it look good and look the way that we expect a Utah defensive backfield to look. But it's it's just a lot of work.
Yeah, and you're not wrong about that. Trust me, I've listened to Morgan Scalley. We had Alex Napolis go up there and get the audio from the assistant coach interviews earlier this week, and he said that, like, okay, so what's the focus for spring ball, Michelle? You know, the first thing he pointed to?
Safeties.
Well,
safeties in the cornerback.
Yeah, that's what I pointed to. He's like, here's the thing. We have guys back there, essentially. He's like, we've got bodies back there. But our biggest goal early on in spring camp is figuring out, figuring out which of those guys to give the most reps to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, finding out, okay, who in theory is your 1, 2, 3 deep guys here, and invest in those guys, because those are the guys who need to get up to speed the quickest.
Yep. I agree. I think that's the biggest thing on Utah's to-do list, probably followed behind sorting out who's going to back up Cam Rising.
Sure. But
I think those are the two biggest priorities for this team. I realize that offensive line is also important. I'm just not terribly worried about it. You know, I don't think that's as big of a task as those other two things.
Well, Brandon Rose, just stay healthy, sir. That's all we care about at this point.
Or Isaac Wilson.
Isaac's right there, too.
It doesn't matter. Just someone establish yourself and stay healthy. That's
sure.
All we want.
Yeah, no doubt. That would be big. All right, we will take a timeout here. We'll come back on the other side. We'll dig into 5 minutes of, talk about some of the other topics we've not had a chance to touch on quite yet. We have the re-debut of a new professional team here in Utah. Kicking off their season tonight out at America First Field. We'll talk about all that next right here on The Saturday Show.
$500, baby, and you can pick my teammate.
Give him the chump.
You mean play basketball?
Welcome back to The Saturday Show here on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. All right, Jason, I'm trying to place this one. This white man can't jump?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I got it right. Thank you. Michelle, have you seen that one?
You haven't seen that one? I've even seen that one.
I am not hearing Michelle for some reason.
Sorry. You are.
Yeah.
You haven't. Michelle says she has not seen
it. No, I have not seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay. Well, we're discovering more and more movies, and Michelle's got to add to her list of to catch up on at some point. All right, welcome back. All right, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the world of football, Michelle. Maybe the most dominant player in the NFL's past decade has called it a career, Michelle. Aaron Donald, 3-time Defensive Player of the Year, just an absolute all-timer at the defensive tackle position, is retiring from the NFL at the age of 32.
Man, I wish I had retired at the age of 32.
All of us do. Come on. 10 years, Michelle, 3-time Defensive Player of the Year, 8-time First-Team All-Pro, 10-time Pro Bowl selection, and oh, by the way, the 2014 Defensive Rookie of the Year out of Pitt.
I mean, he's had quite the career, and I think there's no shame in hanging it up and going and enjoying your life, whatever that looks like. The accolade list there, I mean, that's pretty incredible. What a great career, and I think just seeing all the respect and the flowers that were given to him from various people from all over the NFL and the sports world just really kind of speaks to the character of the guy.
No doubt. He is one of two defensive player of the year. Excuse me. One of two players to have been named a Pro Bowler in their first 10 seasons in the NFL. The only other one, Michelle, some guy named Lawrence Taylor.
That's a throwback.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, two future Hall of Famers, no doubt. He and Barry Sanders, the only players in NFL history to have played 10 seasons, get selected to the Pro Bowl in each of those years, according to the Elias Sports Bureau. He played also exactly 10 seasons for Barry Sanders. It's just incredible, the symmetry of some of this. But dominant player, as you mentioned, it's good for him to be able to go enjoy his life. He has 111 career sacks as a defensive tackle. An undersized defensive tackle at that, Michelle. They listed him at 6'2", 285, but he was as violent and strong as anybody I've seen in my recent memory at defensive line.
You know, he's a one of those case in points as to why I think it's so important and pertinent. And the NFL's not going to do this because they love their measurables. But yeah, this is a case in point of ignoring those measurables, because you just never know what kind of package a once-in-a-lifetime talent is going to come in. Imagine if he had been passed up on simply because he was a little short.
Well, he was taken first round, 13th pick. By then, the St. Louis Rams obviously moved him to Los Angeles, and he's just an all-timer. Like, here's the thing. We all know about the Rams' history, the fearsome foursome led by the great Merlin Olsen and obviously Phil Olsen, like the two Utah natives. Well, Aaron Donald's right there in that pantheon of the greatest defensive linemen from a franchise that's had a lot of them.
Just so cool. So cool. What a great career. It's sad that we don't get to watch him anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
But just tip of the cap to you, sir. Job well done.
All right. Russell Wilson has officially landed in Pittsburgh, Michelle. I'm not sure it's going to work out the way that the Steelers want it to, because they apparently think it's going to work out, because they traded former first-round pick Kenny Pickett to the Philadelphia Eagles after the move. Pickett apparently was upset with them going out and bringing in Wilson, but I would have kept Pickett myself.
Russell Wilson's an interesting one.
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard great things, and I've heard not so great things about him. But I think, at least based off of what I kind of saw and observed of his time, well, his last couple of seasons in Seattle and then his brief time with Denver, just feels like he's on the downward slide of his career.
Yep.
And maybe we'll stand corrected, you know, once we see him suit up in Pittsburgh. But I agree with you. I don't know that this is going to work out as well as Pittsburgh thinks they want it to, if that makes sense.
Well, and Pickett has had that moniker of being small hands Pickett, and he was part of a less than stellar quarterback class.
That.
Yeah, trust me. Michelle, I saw when he got traded, somebody's like, Philadelphia wants this, and it was a guy like a normal sized guy with like little tiny hands. I was like, oh, okay, let's be nice here, everybody. But nonetheless, it's going to work out, I think, for Pickett, because he gets to go to a franchise that's got a pretty good quarterback in Jalen Hurts there, and he'll be able to work obviously behind him. And at the same time, he gets to play for the team he grew up rooting for. He grew up in New Jersey, South New Jersey, as PK will point out, which Philadelphia sports kind of dominate that area. So it's fun to have him be able to go play for the club he grew up rooting for.
Again, this is another one of those cases of how often does that happen? You know, you have guys that grow up in certain places, loving certain teams, but oftentimes they get sent clear across the country. They don't get that opportunity to, you know, play for the hometown team or the team that they grew up cheering for. So I think that's kind of cool, and hopefully it works out for them. Hopefully it's a great move.
Yeah, no doubt. We'll see how it works. See how it goes. The Russell Wilson experiment with Pittsburgh will be interesting, because this is a franchise, speaking of Pittsburgh, that they don't they are used to having success. And if it doesn't work out, because this is a 1-year deal, by the way, Michelle, if I'm not mistaken, I think they just signed the 1-year deal with Russell Wilson. He is getting 38 of his nearly $40 million paid out by the Denver Broncos. So
right.
Way to go, Denver! Like, you have fun with that $85 million dead cap hit, but we'll see. It's going to be very interesting to see if Russell Wilson can kind of reignite his career. I'm just not convinced it's going to work out.
Yeah, I'm a little unsure on that myself. Like I said, it feels like he's already hit his peak, and he's probably, I think, in the process of washing out at some point. But
yeah.
I've been wrong before. I could be very wrong on that account.
Yeah, we'll see. Also, over in the college football universe, Michelle, the new college football playoff format has been agreed to. The interesting part is the stipulations, based on everything I read yesterday. They have not clarified how many teams. That is still to be determined, whether it's 12 or 14. It'll be no less than 12, obviously, but they could expand it out. But The interesting part is the revenue distribution here. 58% of the future revenue of the college football playoff will be going to the SEC and the Big Ten, 32% going to the ACC and the Big 12, and the remaining 10% dispersed amongst the other five G5 conferences, Michelle. That will average out to about $21 million per school in the SEC and the Big Ten, whereas Utah and BYU as members of the Big 12 will be getting just north of $12 million based on the projections right now.
Color me shocked. Like, look, we all know this is moving towards it just being the SEC and Big Ten show. Like, and it's very small, incremental moves, but they're happening at a faster pace, and this is just another brick in that wall that's been placed and mortared. Get ready. Like, Big 12, ACC, they're going to cease to exist. The couple of desirable teams left in those conferences are going to get sucked up into either the SEC or the Big Ten, and then everyone else is just going to be left to figure it out. Well, figure it out.
Yeah. And the other thing about this is it says that the sources, so this is the ESPN story, sources caution that the exact format is not finalized with regards to how many teams are in it, Michelle, but they add this, and that the Big Ten and SEC will have the bulk of control over that.
Of course. Of course.
Way to go, guys. Way to go.
I have little faith after last summer. Like, I know everybody wants me to be like so excited about the Big 12 and the future of the Big 12, but it's like I think it's going to be such a brief little blip on the radar.
Yeah.
The dominoes are just falling so fast. I think there's going to be a shakeup sooner rather than later.
Well, it seems that way. I'm with you on that. It's just the way that things, like, you thought, okay, this is a ways off, and then it happens. You're like, mm-hmm. Oh, that happened quick. And then the next thing, it's like, okay, yeah, it is spinning faster and faster. It's like, okay, well, yeah, well, let's just get ready for it because it's coming sooner rather than later.
Yep.
And then one other thing, this involves Utah State. It's never a fun thing to report on stuff. I should mention this, though. Blaze Taylor, a former college football star at Arkansas State who played for Arkansas State for 4 years, was taken into custody by U.S. Marshals earlier this week here in Utah. He had been working at Utah State. Recently had been hired at Texas A&M, where his dad was going to be an assistant coach there. But he has been charged with two counts of first-degree murder. He's accused of poisoning Jade Benning in February of 2023. Benning died March 6th of 2023 on her 25th birthday, and her five-month-old fetus, which Taylor is believed to have fathered, died a week prior to that. Awful story.
Yeah, that was a wild one. Ben Anderson sent that in our private chat, and I read it on my Uber ride to the airport yesterday. Just absolutely gutting.
Yeah.
It never ceases to amaze me how cold some people can be.
Yep, he was a senior defensive analyst this past season, 2023. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he did play for Blake Anderson at Arkansas State. That explains the connection between there. But his father, Trooper Taylor, is a longtime college coach, had recently joined Texas A&M's coaching staff as their running backs coach and associate head coach under Mike Elko, and it was expected that that Blaze was going to go to Texas A&M, but it appears that things are going to go a different direction.
Unless evidence surfaces that he's been wrongly accused, I think this is heading in a very certain direction, and how sad.
Yep, no doubt. All right, on some better news, though, Michelle, the Utah Royals are back after 3 seasons of not being a franchise. They are back, and today is their first NWSL match since they left to go back to Kansas City. It's awesome to have the Royals back. They'll be taking on the Chicago Red Stars tonight at America First Field. The good news on this, Michelle, and I learned this earlier this week, they're expecting to have close to, if not an absolute sellout out at AFF.
I love hearing that. I really, really love hearing that. I love the surge that women's sports are having. I love that Utah, the state of Utah, has been a little bit of an epicenter for that, just with like the success, the longstanding success of the Red Rocks. And now some other teams are starting to kind of build off of that. And I can say personally from my standpoint, point. Soccer is probably the most popular sport in Utah for girls and women. It feels like a lot of us were kind of pushed into that direction and grew up playing that sport. And so to have that kind of outlet where, A, we can see local talent be able to take the field in a professional setting and have that option for women that play sports is awesome. And then just, of course, the representation. Like, I remember how big, like, watching someone like Mia Hamm was when I was growing up and playing soccer. But to have it in your own backyard, I think is an even bigger deal.
Well, and the fun part about this is you have athletes. We had Brecken Mozingo, who's a former Utah high school star at Alta High. Obviously played at BYU. She's now with the Royals. She joined DJ and PK yesterday, and she said, "I am ecstatic," because she went to Alta High, Michelle. She a stone's throw away from AFF is where she played high school soccer. And she said, "I grew up going to what was then Rio Tinto Stadium, now America First Field." And she said, "It's so cool to consider that I used to sit in the stands there. I played my high school championships on that field, but now I get to play as a professional on that field."
Yeah, it's huge. I can't state or emphasize enough how big of a deal this is. And I think and I hope that it just opens more doors and more avenues for women in this state to participate in and be involved with sports, whether it's as a fan, whether it's as a player, a coach, administration, reporting, whatever. This is such a huge deal and it matters.
Well, the nice part is there's representation all across this roster. Carly Nelson, a former Timpanogos and Utah star. She obviously spent time overseas and also stateside in the professional ranks. Cameron Tucker, former BYU star in her own right. Michelle Vasconcelos, who played, formerly Michelle Murphy, who played here in high school as well as BYU. And then, funny enough, Michelle, on the Chicago side of things, Nadia Gomes, who played at BYU, is playing for Chicago in this, or could be in the lineup for tonight's match. We'll see once they come out with their lineups. But there is a lot of local connections in the NWSL, and as you kind of mentioned, it's fun to celebrate that and have that as part of our pro sports landscape here in the state of Utah.
Yes. I know we're all hyper-focused on the MLB and NHL stuff, but this is a really big deal, too, and I hope people support it.
Just so you know, we are going to be carrying the Royals games here on the KSL Sports Zone tonight. If I recall correctly, we'll have it on 1280 a.m. as well as 1160 a.m. So two different ways to catch that debut for the Utah Royals against the Chicago Red Stars. It'll also be on ION TV, so search your TV guide if you're looking to watch it. It'll be a national broadcast as well. All right, so we will wrap up this edition of the Saturday Show coming up next, talking about some of the things that we didn't. Maybe we'll circle back on a couple things as well. We'll catch up on all of it. Come up next, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show. All right, here we go. This is a good one. This gets played after every seemingly big win, even if it's not, you're actually the champions. But it's like one of those classic songs. Michelle Bodkin, Jay Catch along for the ride here. All right, Michelle, it's been a fun show, obviously. We always have a good time, I feel like. But before we go here, I wanted to get your thought on, I've got to pull up this story. Let me pull it up real quick here. Obviously, soccer doesn't necessarily register to the same level as some of the other pro sports, just sports in general here stateside. But the thing about soccer is it can deliver some of the biggest moments like of all time. Think about like some of the late goals that get scored in soccer matches and the like. So we have the U.S. men's national team has a really, really young, talented generation upcoming. And obviously with the United States, Canada, and Mexico hosting the 2026 World Cup, got a little extra focus on what the U.S. men's national team is going to do. But Coventry City is over in England, Michelle. And they have a forward named Haji Wright, who's figures to be part of that World Cup squad if everything goes according to plan. He led his team for just the second time in their history to the FA Cup semifinals, which is essentially. Do you know what the U.S. Open Cup in soccer here stateside?
I have heard of it, yes.
So essentially anybody who has a team, semi-pro or professional, can enter that competition and in theory can win it. The FA Cup is England's version of that.
Okay.
So they were playing Wolverhampton Wanderers, which is an English Premier League team. Coventry City plays in the championship. It's like a second tier in England. But Haji Wright scored the game winner deep in stoppage time to send his team to the semifinals. Absolutely incredible scenes. It's fun to see stuff like this because, like I said, soccer doesn't necessarily may register for a lot of our listeners out there, but the scenes that play out late in some of these matchups like this that are do or die are absolutely incredible.
I do have to give soccer is a hard sport for me to watch, even though I played it.
Yes.
It's not something that I sit down and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to just sit and watch soccer all day today. No. Not for me. You want me to go to the pitch? Okay, like I'll go to the pitch. I'm game for any time you send me outside. So any reason to sit and enjoy the sunshine, I'm here for it. But I will give, you're right. Like when you like take the little snapshots of the entire match, those games do deliver incredible moments, but it's because they are so few and far between.
It's true, and you're not wrong about that. So it's just crazy to see that, and obviously with the connection to the United States men's national team, awesome to see that. So congratulations to Coventry City. That might be the first and last time we ever talk about them on this program, but hey, we'll give them a shout out. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Michelle, sticking in England, it's Emily Morgan. She's part of the Utah Women's Red Rocks gymnastics program, correct?
Yes.
But she's currently on a leave. Am I wrong about this? Like she's trying to get into the Olympics, correct?
Yes. Yes. So she is back home in London competing for a spot in the 2024 Paris Olympics with Team England, Team Great Britain.
Great Britain, yeah.
So she's been gone for pretty much the entire month of March. She will be back next week to compete in the Pac-12 championships, though.
But I'm just seeing this, and you retweeted this. She's in fourth place right now in the all-around rankings. Is that right?
Yes. It's looking like she's doing really, really well. So there's a chance that she may be heading to Paris this summer and competing again for Great Britain in the Olympics, and cool enough, she was part of the team that delivered a bronze medal, and Great Britain hadn't medaled in like 100 years. So
jeez, okay.
So she has already made some history with them, but it looks like she's maybe on the path to do a little bit more this summer. So that's really cool.
That is awesome. Congratulations to her. And then, the agony of defeat this time of year, Michelle, for these one-bid leagues. Princeton has won like a gazillion games this year in the Ivy League. They lost the Ivy League championship to Brown, and it looks like they're going to miss out on the NCAA tournament.
Oh.
They have like a 25 wins on the season or something like that.
That is brutal.
Yeah, Brown was the 4 seed in the Ivy League tournament, and the Brown Bears are going to be going to the NCAA tournament. Princeton could, I guess, in theory, have an outside shot at an at-large bid, but as an Ivy League school, that's a brutal way to see your season potentially end, at least going to the NCAA tournament.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, to basically do everything right except for win your conference championship. Ouch.
Yep. So, tough scenes, but we'll see. The good news is if they don't make the NCAA tournament, the consolation is that you will be a 1 seed in the NIT. So that is the positive. And I did see, by the way, I've seen some emails rolling out. Utah is sending out emails saying that they are going to be hosting at least 3 rounds if they win in the NIT. So,
hey.
We'll see.
Yeah, we will see.
All right, Michelle, any final thoughts from you before we wrap this up?
You know, just have a great day and enjoy St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, please do, everybody. Obviously, be responsible about it, but have fun at the same time. It's a really fun holiday, and obviously a lot of things going on. So we'll just say that. Have a great St. Patrick's Day. For Michelle, for Jason, I'm Jake. Thanks for tuning into the Saturday Show. Plenty more to come in the week ahead here on the KSL Sports, and we'll be back next Saturday as well with another edition of the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.